Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity is off today and will be off actually through next week. And one of the men who will be very ably filling in for Jim over that time is Kevin Williamson of NationalReview.com. And Kevin, plenty to talk about here as we get close to this Good Friday holiday weekend. I'm celebrating Good Friday, not Earth Day. I don't know about you, but we can...
I do more of the Good Friday thing than the Earth Day thing, as it turns out. Just choice of religion, I suppose.
That's exactly what it is. So let's talk about the good political martini today.
Right on.
These are harder and harder to find as the days go on, especially...
Yeah, wait till November.
...as it relates to the economy. But we've been talking from time to time about just how the electorate's not very excited about some of the Republican options right now. And I'm not sure that this really changes that level of excitement. But a name that has not been talked about much, but somebody who in debates and just in the discourse over the next several months as this nomination process gets going for the GOP can make it very interesting is former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson. He's a Republican on paper. A lot of people consider him a libertarian. He does not, but he's got a lot of libertarian tendencies. Some would say they go too far because he's in favor of legalizing various drugs. When it comes to fiscal issues, given some of the people in there that have less than stellar records, it could be a good voice to have on the page that comes across perhaps a little more credibly than Ron Paul.
Yeah, you know, he came by, Governor Johnson didn't visit us a couple of months ago, and I like him a lot. I like him tremendously. I disagree with him on abortion and some of those things, but as being, you know, a basically responsible libertarian kind of guy, I think that he's got a lot going for him. I don't think he has a chance in hell of being elected president of the United States and winning the nomination or anything like that, but if Republicans are prepared to nominate a pro-choice, pro-gay marriage, open borders, dope-smoking governor from the Southwest, he's the one we're going to do, I think, probably.
Yeah, the fiscal issue is really the only one he's going to have any sort of mild traction on whatsoever because, as you just mentioned, the base of the Republican Party not okay with his position on any of the major social issues, and clearly when it comes to borders, he's not their guy either. But
yeah, he's wrong on that stuff, although I suspect that the marijuana decriminalization is starting to is picking up a little bit, particularly in the Southwest where people are really dealing with the fallout of the cartel economics that our drug policies create and the violence associated with that. But I don't think that'll be a major issue anytime in the near future. Although the good news for people like Gary Johnson is that, the fiscal stuff is the whole story for the foreseeable future unless something, unusual and unexpected happens.
That's true. And, that I think is going to be the positive involvement of him in this race. As you mentioned, he doesn't have a chance to win, and people wouldn't be all that excited in a lot of ways if he did. But what he can do as the issue does focus on our debt and on our economy and on the job situation is is drive some of these folks who are more electable in the right direction on those critical issues, whether it's a Mitt Romney or even a Newt Gingrich, a Huckabee, if he gets in there. These are guys with kind of mixed records depending on what the political winds were at the time. And if he can make sure that they make some promises that give fiscal conservatives a little more confidence, that'll be good for the party as a whole, I think.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, though. As much as I dislike and am not impressed with the current Republican field, whether it's Romney... Well, okay, take Huckabee out of the mix. But whether it's Romney, whether it's Pawlenty, whether it's Daniels, all of these guys look like Milton Friedman compared to John McCain, right? I mean, you could not possibly have done worse on the economic and fiscal stuff than the Republican Party did last time around. I mean, McCain doesn't know anything about the issues. He doesn't care about these issues. He clearly has contempt for the business community as such and for economic conservatives as such. So, yeah, all of these guys, with the exception of Huckabee, who is a lunatic on economic issues, are certainly an improvement over last time around. And even Huckabee probably would – well, actually, I'm not going to say that. I'm not sure Huckabee would be economically an improvement over the Barack Obama administration. but he's at least got a 50-50 shot of being an improvement.
Hmm. Kevin, you mentioned that a lot of these guys seem like Milton Friedman compared to John McCain. They certainly look like Milton Friedman compared to Barack Obama, who's been going around the country from Northern Virginia to the West Coast and San Francisco this week. Basically, the idea is to talk about shared responsibility and shared prosperity, but most of his time has been spent demonizing the one plan that's actually out there, and that's the Paul Ryan plan. He's supposedly pushing his own plan, but since he doesn't have one, that makes it kind of difficult.
Yeah.
But does this come off as anything more than just petty politics, just like that major speech last week, or do you think he's actually gaining some traction here by telling people that the evil Republican plan is out to hurt old people and students and young people, whereas he's trying to make sure that the rich people pay their fair share?
Well, I mean, never underestimate the power of fear-mongering when it comes to taking away grandma's check or somebody's student loan or something like that. That kind of crap is really effective. You know, Paul Ryan is about to get to, you know, have the Newt Gingrich experience. You know, he's going to get the joy of being the demonized congressional leader without actually the fun of being Speaker of the House and the power that's attached to that. So, you know, I certainly hope for Paul Ryan's sake that man, I hope he's just clean as a Boy Scout in every possible way, because they're going to come after him personally, because they can't come after him on the issues, because Obama's numbers just don't add up. You know, the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget just came out with a study this morning saying that, you know, if you look at the real numbers, or the more credible CBO numbers versus Obama's rosy projections, not only will he not achieve the deficit reduction that he says he will achieve, he won't achieve any. That the debt will continue to get larger as a share of the economy. And that's just, you know, that's not a sustainable trajectory to be on. But what they're going to do is two things. One, they're going to try to make Paul Ryan into Satan. He's just going to be, you know, Scrooge McDuck and every other bad thing you can think of, and look for the signs of him as Hitler at a rally near you sometime very soon. I'll bet $100 that before the end of the year I see a sign with Paul Ryan with the Hitler mustache on it, held by some dimwit somewhere, probably in Wisconsin. But after that, and the other thing they're probably going to do going into the 2012 election is they're going to look for some social issues. You know, this is what they want to dig up. Because the Obama guys and the Democrats in 2012, they'd much rather be talking about gay marriage, abortion, stuff like that that'll really bring their people out, than talking about the budget. Because, as I keep pointing out, what we're really negotiating here is not how to pay for Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and all the rest of this stuff. What we're negotiating is how we're not going to pay for it. Because the truth is, it's simply not going to be paid. The entitlement liabilities are beyond what is politically tolerable for us to do. You know, we would have to basically double federal taxes to maintain, just to keep the debt as a share of the economy where it is. You know, 88% tax increase on the next generation. If we're going to actually try to pay these things off, that of course would have catastrophic economic consequences as well. So what we're really talking about here is how we're not going to pay these things, not how we're going to pay them. And if you're the party of Santa Claus, you know, the last thing you want to be running on is, oh, I've got a better plan for not paying you the stuff that I told you I was going to pay you than the other guy does, because that doesn't look very good.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think Ryan's got a couple of things going for him that are good. First of all, I believe he's on his first wife, which makes him in a better position than Newt Gingrich. And I don't believe he comes from money, so he can't be accused of, you know, all being one of these fat cat families that's always been living in the lap of luxury. And so I think he does come across as somebody who has an understanding of what it's like to live as a middle-class family. And thirdly, the fact that he came out with this plan when he did, this is, you know, when it needs to come out in the budget cycle, but the Democrats, of course, proved last year that that's not necessarily something you have to do. Yes. But now the president has got to be out there for a year and a half basically saying, my plan is, oh, wait, look how horrible this plan is. It's going to be interesting to see if he can duck and dodge that long before the bulk of the American people, or at least a simple majority in the Electoral College, can realize that he has no plan and all he's doing is demonizing and pitting one class of people.
And you know what? To the extent that he does have a plan, has nobody noticed that Barack Obama has just resuscitated Graham Rudman? You know, his debt fail-safe mechanism, which would, you know, lock in automatic spending increases and automatic spending cuts, rather, and automatic tax increases if the share of the deficit doesn't hit a certain GDP target, is exactly like what Phil Graham and Warren Rudman proposed and got enacted into law back in the 1980s in the Graham-Rudman-Hollings Act. And, of course, it didn't work very well back then, and it won't work now. It has an important difference, of course. The Obama version includes tax increases, whereas Graham Rudman was just imposing automatic spending cuts. But, you know, he's reached back to the Reagan era and Phil Graham for his for the most credible part of his agenda. And it's not, you know, it doesn't seem to be very likely to work this time either. I think Graham Rudman was a good idea, but it just simply didn't work because Congress can always set aside constraints like that, like they set aside on the doc fix in Medicare, like they set aside every other thing in the PAYGO rules and the rest of it. You know, these little gimmicky things about we're going to pass a rule that says we have to follow the rules don't work if you can suspend the rules, which is what Congress does.
Last topic real quickly before we let you go for today. Kevin, the president, of course, as we mentioned, has been out there at these town hall events, and he took a question which was very reminiscent of one President Bush took several years ago when David Gregory at a White House press conference asked him, you know, what's your biggest mistake and what have you learned from it? Bush didn't do very well on it. Obama didn't do very well either, hemming and hawing and talking about how as he strategized different things, he would have done, you know, one thing differently than another or put another thing first, never giving any specifics whatsoever. So shockingly, the man with the largest ego in the room can't come up with something he's done wrong. I'm sure you were just floored by that.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are a lot of big egos in politics, and there have been a lot of big egos in the White House, and certainly Obama is not the most humble man to have ever held the job. But that always does kind of surprise me, though. You know, if nothing else, just job preparation. You know, people are going to ask you this question. Like when you go into a job interview, people will always ask you, can you tell me about something a genuine mistake you made on your last job, something you wish you'd done different? You have to have a plausible story to tell them, right? And it can't be, well, I work too hard or I care too much. You know, that sort of thing. No one actually buys that. You know, people ask me the biggest mistake I ever made. I mean, I might have trouble answering that question, too, but not for, you know, lack of options. I might say, well, you know, I invested in Enron, and that didn't work out so well, and I bet a whole lot of money once on the Suns to beat the Bulls in the NBA final, I guess. And, you know, there's some relationships that didn't work out so well and things like that. I could give you a whole list of things that I've done wrong. And for a guy in Obama's position who's had, you know, an extraordinary life in a lot of ways, done a lot of things, had a lot of experiences, he ought to be able to say, you know, man, I flubbed up on this thing or that thing, or you know what, putting Nancy Pelosi in charge of the whole healthcare shebang maybe wasn't the best thing I ever decided to do in my life, because now we're going to be fighting it out for the next 25 years because it's a poorly crafted piece of legislation. You know, I mean, you would think you'd be able to come up with something.
And the hysterical part is, in that same answer, he actually praised Nancy Pelosi for her leadership in guiding that whole process through a very complicated time, because he was obviously out there in her neck of the woods. So,
and I would like to praise Nancy Pelosi for her leadership in that as well. I think that it's produced a reasonably good outcome with her as the minority leader instead of the speaker. And, you know, I'm not terribly partisan on this stuff. I don't think much of Republicans either, but, man, she was a mess.
Yeah, she is and remains so to this day. Kevin, great to have you with us. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Kevin Williamson of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.